Strip, and I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer at the Las Vegas Sun, here to get you caught up on all the news and fun this week from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. Summer is here. I'm about to get out of this heat and go on vacation, so sadly you'll be without the Sun on the Strip for the next couple of weeks, but there's a whole lot of stuff to catch up on today and talk about, including not one, but two new music festivals coming to the Las Vegas Festival grounds at the north end of the Strip. Joining me to talk about those and more is Spencer Patterson, editor of Las Vegas Weekly Magazine, longtime Vegas music guru. Thanks for checking in today.
Thanks for having me on, Brock.
Before we get to those exciting new events, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the blockbuster merger that finally went down this week on the Strip. Eldorado Resorts is buying Caesars Entertainment in a $17.3 billion cash and stock transaction that will merge the two into the biggest gaming company in the world with 60 resorts across 16 different states. Eldorado currently operates 26 casinos. Caesars has close to 40. The new company will be called Caesars. It will be led by Eldorado executives and based in Reno, although it will have a significant corporate presence in Las Vegas. Eldorado previously did not have any assets in Las Vegas, but the new company will retain, at least for the time being, the 9 Caesars resorts on or near the Strip. Those are Caesars Palace, of course, its Nobu Hotel, Bally's Harrah's, The Link, Paris, Planet Hollywood, The Cromwell, and The Rio. This development, of course, comes after many months of board debate at Caesars with the infamous corporate raider Carl Icahn acquiring enough stock and control to push the company into the sale. For a while, there were rumors that Affinity Gaming, which is where recently named Caesars CEO Tony Rodio worked previously, was going to buy the Vegas-based company, was going to buy Caesars, but that obviously did not happen. Rodio said this week that the Total Rewards player loyalty program will still be incorporated into the new Caesars company. But more significantly, the Eldorado bosses have indicated that it's very likely that one or more of the Vegas properties will be sold, with CEO Tom Reege saying, quote, "As I sit here today, there is more Strip exposure than we need. I would expect we would be a seller of Strip assets, but that decision has not been made." The Las Vegas Sun's very own Brian Horwath wrote a story today that has Phil Ruffin, owner of Treasure Island, saying he might be interested in buying a Caesars property under the right circumstances, but he's not interested in the most obvious spot on the chopping block, and that's the Rio, just off the Strip on Flamingo Road. That place has been rumored for sale for quite a while now. Definitely go to LasVegasSun.com and read Brian's story and coverage of all this stuff. Another big rumor I heard earlier this month was that Planet Hollywood might not be part of this sale, so it could be that Eldorado would be looking to unload that place, which would be really interesting from the standpoint of the Caesars entertainment portfolio, because they put a lot of resources into developing Zappos Theater at Planet Hollywood into a big moneymaker with all the resident headliner shows they have there. So, yeah, that's a whole big thing. Spencer, I know you don't consider yourself to be a Strip casino expert, but this is all pretty interesting stuff and could lead to some significant changes.
Absolutely.
If you were a rich casino boss dude,
mm-hmm. right?
Which Caesars property would you buy?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I guess Caesars Palace is like the obvious choice because it's the name. It's the
I'm sure that's the one that's not for sale.
Right, right. I mean, I guess they all have things about them that are intriguing. The ones on the Strip, but also the ones off the Strip. Like, I was at the Rio recently, and there's actually a lot of interesting things going on in there right now, although there weren't a lot of people actually doing those things the night I was there. But I think there's potential there.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I had Case Kiefer on here, and we were talking about the World Series of Poker, and that's an asset at the mm-hmm. Rio. So if you want to get into the World Series of Poker business,
right.
maybe you want to pick it up. If Ruffin at Treasure Island is seriously interested, I would think he might be interested in The Link.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty close to Treasure Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've really put a lot of money into that place. It's got some you know, the high roller wheel and the zip line. It's more of like a family-friendly attraction kind of destination at this point, and that seems to fall in line with what he's done at Treasure Island. So,
right, you've got the whole Link Promenade there, which has a lot of cool things going on, and like you said, the high roller, and they're building all that stuff behind there. So there's, that's definitely like a growth spot, I think, on the Strip.
It's weird to think that, you know, like Paris or one of these other kind of iconic properties could suddenly have a different ownership. But I guess it's also weird to think about they've all been owned. Those eight places have all been owned by the same company for quite a while now. So,
right.
We'll see what happens.
Right. I guess it's kind of like when MGM acquired a lot of the Steve Wynn stuff.
Yeah.
Some things changed and some things kind of stayed more or less the same as far as the themes and the look of it, the feel.
Hmm. Okay, let's talk about something more in our wheelhouse.
Okay.
Very suddenly announced this week. Well, actually, I don't know if it was officially announced, but we just learned about it this week. The Day in Vegas Festival is coming to the Las Vegas Festival Grounds November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. It's being put on by Golden Voice, and the lineup is very focused on hip-hop and R&B. There's some huge names here. J. Cole, Travis Scott, Kendrick Lamar, Migos, 21 Savage, Tyler, the Creator, a whole lot of up-and-comers in the rap world, too. It's a ton of, like, pretty relevant artists, actually.
Yeah.
I was texting you the other night that this is a bit shocking to me because I never thought I would see, like, a real hip-hop festival on the Las Vegas Strip at any venue. Were you surprised to find out about this thing also?
A little bit, although I guess in terms of that, like, Vegas has come a long way since the days of, you know, like the sheriff saying he didn't want hip hop shows on the Strip,
right.
but you still do see maybe some unease at times when there are certain shows, like you might see extra security or, you know, metal detectors where maybe there aren't sometimes. So I guess in a way it's a little bit surprising, but I guess it shows how much, you know, things have changed here and also the way hip hop has just become, you know, the mainstream music of the day in a lot of ways. And so it does make a lot of sense to do this, but it definitely was a surprise. Like I didn't hear about this or see it coming.
Mm-hmm. Some of the artists on this lineup have played the Life is Beautiful Festival in past years. And that event, of course, is coming back this year downtown in September. But this event seems very different from Life is Beautiful, which has more of like a multi-genre, almost indie vibe. And this is very, like we said, very much focused on, I guess, urban genres.
Yeah, to me, this is like a festival for like hip-hop heads to come to Vegas, or obviously if they're here, then it's great for them too. But I think you'll see a lot of people who are just super into hip-hop and R&B. And like you said, there's a lot of up-and-coming things there. Like our Zoneal, who's our primary hip-hop freelance writer for The Weekly, like the second this poster came out yesterday, he emailed me all excited about a lot of the stuff going on here. So that's a good sign because he knows like a lot about this stuff and, you know, he was really into it. So I think, you know, obviously the big names will draw a lot of people, but I have a feeling like the depth of the lineup is going to bring a lot of other people there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once you get past like the big names, there's a lot of artists on there that probably have never played a proper Vegas show.
Right, I would think so. A lot of them that I don't recognize by name. You know, there's the big names at the top, then there's kind of a tier under that of things that we have seen, started to see a little bit, like Boogie with the Hoodie or Schoolboy Q or Flatbush Zombies were here recently, things like that. But there's a lot of other stuff on there that, like you said,
Sheck West
I doubt.
Is on there.
Yeah, I don't think Kelly Uchis has been here before, as far as I can remember.
I think there's some of these names we're saying have done like club appearances.
I could
but
be.
Not even a full set.
No, it's cool and it's interesting to me also that Golden Voice is the one doing it because, you know, they do Coachella obviously, and some other things, a lot of things in California, which is where they're based. But as far as I can remember, they haven't been doing much of anything here in Las Vegas since maybe in the 90s when they used to do some punk shows at the Huntridge Theater. So, you know, that's interesting to me that they decided to do this here, not in California, which would have been kind of the obvious move for them because it's their backyard. Mm-hmm. So I think that could signify, you know, other things maybe down the road, maybe more of a presence there.
Mm-hmm. And I saw this event pop up on my weekly mailing that I get from AEG too. So I think AEG is somehow involved with Golden Voice.
Sure. And they're involved in Coachella with them. They partner on that. So that makes sense. Yeah, I think so.
Weird name though. Day N.
Just the letter Vegas. N. And we don't really know if that's like stands for and, like day and night, or if it's in, like a day in Vegas. But
it's 3 days.
It's 3 days, and it's a lot of it's at night. So I don't know what that means exactly, but maybe there's some kind of hidden meaning that will be revealed later.
It's a big show. Tickets go on sale Friday at noon.
It's also kind of a Halloween weekend show in a way. I mean, Halloween's on a Thursday, so this is the day after that, and then the next 2 days. So I don't know if you like you'll see costumey things going on, or if it's kind of not that. But
yeah, more info at dayinvegas2019.com. Another festival event that had been previously announced for this same venue recently announced its lineup. It's also a first-year festival. It's called Metarama. It's happening October 19th and 20th, and it's being billed as a first-of-its-kind gaming and music festival. Marshmello, Logic, Snoop Dogg, Alan Walker, Group Love, Lil Yachty, and Shaquille O'Neal, who just started his Vegas DJ residency at Encore Beach Club, are among the musical acts slated for Metarama. And there are also a bunch of celebrities from the streaming world, YouTube personalities, comedians, and video gamers signed up as well. There's going to be two outdoor stages hosting performances and pro esports exhibition matches. There's going to be a celebrity pro-am tournament featuring musicians and gamers from the lineup competing against each other. Imagine Dragons is doing a special gaming-only appearance.
Yeah, so I wondered about that the most. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that, like, Dan Reynolds gets up there and he's playing a video game against, like, another celebrity musician?
I think so. If you're a fan of Imagine Dragons as a group of humans and not their music, then this is the festival for you because you get to hang out and watch them play video games.
Well, I was kind of thinking about that in terms of the whole festival. Like, I wonder, I'm guessing that this is really targeted at the gaming fan. I'm sure, you know, some music fans may go, but a lot of these are names, some of these are names that we see in Las Vegas on a fairly regular basis. Marshmello's in the clubs, Snoop plays, you know, a lot here. Other names on this bill have been here recently. So I feel like, especially in terms of locals, the bigger draw might be the other stuff, all the gaming-related things, and then, like, cool to have all these artists performing while all that's happening, or, you know, at intervals throughout the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Metarama's being produced by C3 Presents, which does Lollapalooza and Austin City Limits Music Festival.
And they used to book the Cosmo when it first opened.
Right.
A lot of those cool shows at the Cosmo were their bookings.
Mm-hmm. And they're partnering with the locally based esports hospitality concepts, which is Scott London and Seth Shore. I think this is another indication that Vegas is slowly, but it is kind of going all in on esports. Casinos and different venues are always looking for ways to create programming that could capture this huge international audience. I mean, we might be a little bit out of the age range, and
this might be a little
bit mysterious to us, but it's a huge, huge audience.
Yeah, and it's smart for them to try to continue to make sure that Vegas is the hub for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things going on here in that realm already. And then to do something like this here is smart, and it seems like the next step for that.
Yeah, the some sort of esports space is kind of the trend for casino resorts on the Strip right now. The Link just opened another little room where you can watch and play as part of their big kind of interactive inclined casino renovations. It's just a big trend right now. Another big takeaway from both of these festivals, I think, is that MGM Resorts is fully activating this Las Vegas Festival Grounds space. It's hosted a few different music and sports and culinary events over the past couple years. Nothing as big as Rock in Rio, which kind of debuted that venue.
Right, that's kind of what they built it for, you could say, in a way. That's where it kind of started.
Mm-hmm.
And then that didn't end up coming back, so the place has sat more or less empty for most of the last few years. Like you said, there's been a few things here and there.
Yeah.
The iHeartRadio Daytime Village, I think, has been there, or is definitely going to be there this year. But I do think it's good to see them using that more because it's already there. And, you know, of course, they're not doing the festivals that they used to do on the south end of the strip, you know, obviously after the shooting 2 years ago. So it's good to see, you know, MGM getting back kind of into the festival business and doing, you know, more things with this space because it is a good space.
Yeah, I think it has been getting busier. It's hosted a bunch of private and corporate events that are aligned with different conventions that have come through Vegas. And yeah, I think it's safe to predict that we're going to see the return of that outdoor country music festival.
Right.
That formerly existed as the Route 91 thing, and that was such a huge success at that Las Vegas Village venue before the shooting.
And yeah.
There have been rumors that it could return as early as this fall. I haven't heard anything about that in a while.
Yeah, it feels like it's getting late in the going for them not to have announced it yet, but right. I guess it's possible. But I think, yeah, there was a point where the other festival lot, the one across from Mandalay Bay, was being used almost every weekend, you know, when the weather was nice, for one thing or another, country festival, hard rock festival, you know, different other events, beer festivals, wine tastings. Mm-hmm. And I could see them, you know, starting to shift all that kind of stuff over to here, and it could become a more used space.
Yeah, obviously it was easier for that to happen on the south end, where that place is completely surrounded by other MGM properties. Right. The festival grounds is at the corner of Sahara and Las Vegas Boulevard, right across from SLS.
Yeah, kind of next to Circus Circus.
Yeah, MGM Circus Circus is MGM's only property anywhere near right. this site, so there's less return for them to do these events, which maybe is even more of a credit to them that they want to activate that space.
And maybe I'm sure they'll come up with ways to try to sell packages and maybe have, you know, transportation built in to make it easy for people who are staying on the other end of the strip or mid strip to get there, you know, fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even though, so these events, even though they're on the strip, these music festivals are going to depend pretty heavily on local attendance. Which brings us to Brooklyn Bowl, the music hall at the Link Promenade that also depends on locals to fill it up for concerts. Brooklyn Bowl's in the news this past week because it has figured out a way for locals to attend shows and not pay for parking. As of June 19th, local concert goers just need to show their ID and their show ticket to the retail store cashier on the second level at Brooklyn Bowl, and they will have their parking validated so long as they parked at any Caesars self-parking location. So immediately surrounding Brooklyn Bowl, that would be at the Link or at Harrah's or at the Flamingo or maybe the Cromwell or across the strip at Caesar's Palace.
And there's that outdoor lot. There's a smaller lot now kind of behind the High Roller that you can use also. I use that one quite a bit. So yeah, there's a lot of options nearby. So that's a great thing for locals, I think. I think that when Caesar's went to paid parking, initially Brooklyn Bowl's back lot, which is now being turned into convention space, but for a while that huge lot was not impacted by the paid parking change. But then eventually, I think last year sometime, they did go ahead and put in some machines there and made it a paid lot. And I'm guessing that had to impact Brooklyn Bowl's business because I think locals just want to, you know, have things be easy. Of course, when you're in another city for the most part and you go to a show, you know, you just park and go in. And so having an additional parking hassle or fee probably was a bit of a turnoff.
And Brooklyn Bowl really, almost right when it opened, it really quickly became kind of like the locals' music place that was on the strip. The House of Blues used to serve in that role a little bit more and still does in some ways probably, but just the acts that they book at Brooklyn Bowl are very diverse and the tickets are not as expensive as some other concerts and things like that, so...
Yeah, I think they've adjusted nicely. Like, I think when they first opened, or even before they opened, you know, they were coming here from New York. They had locations in other places like London. And I think they thought of it as, okay, it'll be some locals, but it'll be a lot of people from the strip coming. And they were booking a lot of acts, I think, for those people. And I think they quickly realized that it was actually the other way around. There are a lot of local music fans here who needed a spot like this. And, of course, some people do wander in off the strip. You know, it's in a good location if you're on the Link. You're going to the High Roller or you're eating at one of the restaurants along there, you're going to see Brooklyn Bowl and you might be curious and go in. But I think it is mostly locals going to these shows. And so this is a a really savvy move, I think, by Broken Ball to give them another reason to go.
Do you think this is going to be just a one-off type of action because of those unique qualities of this venue, or do you think this is part of this maybe possible burgeoning trend we're seeing of strip spots kind of rolling back their pay-to-park policies? I mean, Wynn already did it. We've heard of other places maybe reversing their decision.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know. I think when the parking changes first took place, there were a lot of questions about validation. Will there be validation if you go for lunch or you go for dinner at a restaurant in one of these casinos? And it was a hard no at that time. And I'm sure that was tough for a lot of businesses. And I wonder if you're one of those other businesses and you see Brooklyn Bowl making sort of their own arrangement here, I'm guessing you're curious now if you can do something like that too. So maybe we will kind of start to see a trickle of this kind of thing. Now, keep in mind a couple things. I spoke to someone at Brooklyn Bowl yesterday just to verify some of the details. So you have to have paid for your ticket in order to get the free parking. If you were on a guest list or a comped list or something like that, I'm told that does not count. So, yeah, so like if you're there covering a show, for example, like us,
so you're out
paying
luck.
For parking, right. And also, of course, it's just that one night, so you can't like buy a ticket to a show, park wherever, and then a week later come back to Caesars for something and try to use your ticket to get free parking. It's just like the night of the show. Mm-hmm. So,
I'll give you my link parking move. I park at Harrah's. The Harrah's garage,
okay.
Which is an older garage, of course, but it's not really ever busy. It's not ever empty, but it's not ever busy where you can't find a spot close to the elevator. And the elevator puts you out on the second story of Harrah's, and you just as soon as you get off the elevator, you hang a left, and that's where the monorail mm-hmm. station is for that serves Harrah's and the Link. So you go right into the back of the Link and
nice.
Right out, and you're there.
Monorail's another trick you can use. I mean, it is, especially if you're a local, I think it's $1 mm-hmm. With a local ID. In terms of that also, so the Brooklyn Bowl said you have to basically have a Southern Nevada residence on your ID to get the free parking. So anywhere around here, but if you're from Reno, that's not free parking. It's not Nevada, it's just Southern Nevada. So that's the arrangement that they made. But I usually park for Brooklyn Bowl. I've been parking at that lot that they put up behind the High Roller. And I did get the Caesars credit card, which, you have to spend a certain amount of money per year on it. But if you do that, then you continue to get free parking at all these lots anyway. So I think that's also a pretty good way to go.
At this point, I might be upset if Caesar stops charging people for parking because I did jump through all these credit card hoops to get it. So
exactly.
Now I just owe a bunch of money for no reason.
Right.
Ditto. Spencer, thanks as always for visiting on the Sun on the Strip.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Brock.
Speaking of getting around the Strip, the Regional Transportation Commission of Southern Nevada recently launched Trip to Strip, an on-demand rideshare service that actually expanded its coverage zone and now covers all of Las Vegas Boulevard from downtown all the way south to the M Resort. It's apparently a limousine-style vehicle that carries up to 11 people. There's no surge pricing ever, and it can stop at all RTC fixed route or paratransit stops, most of which are located near property entrances along the boulevard. It's sort of designed for conventioneers, it feels like, getting from place to place, but also for small groups, and it sounds like a great cheap alternative for bachelorette parties. Rides start at $6. You can use it by downloading the Trip to Strip app from the Apple or Google Play stores. First-time users can receive 15% off that first ride by using the promo code FIRSTRIDE. A couple of new show announcements. Lady Gaga has added dates to her Enigma and Jazz and Piano residency shows at Park Theater. Those are December 28th, 30th, 31st to wrap up this year, which is cool because she's playing New Year's Eve for the second straight year at Park MGM. And then April 30th and May 2nd, 3rd, 7th, 9th, 10th, 13th, 15th, and 16th in 2020. Five of those 12 shows are jazz and piano shows. And that's a bigger ratio than the original run, which was like a whole bunch of Enigma shows and then one jazz and piano show at the end. So those more intimate shows that Gaga really pushed for and wanted to do badly have been a huge success, and MGM and Live Nation are all about it. There was some talk of her extending the residency for another year when these dates were just getting announced, but those people just kind of got the info wrong. She did sign on for 2 years, essentially, to begin in Vegas, so these new shows are still within that deal, within that time frame. But she could and might extend it because it's doing really well and it's generating a lot of buzz for Gaga and for Vegas. And Ariana Grande has added another tour stop in Las Vegas. She's coming back to the Strip at MGM Grand Garden Arena on December 15th. Tickets are on sale July 1st. She just played T-Mobile Arena on May 11th, but added 19 new dates to her Sweetener World Tour, and MGM in December is one of them. My one big show this week is two shows. Paul McCartney at T-Mobile on the 28th and 29th. Should be a lot of fun. And a very diverse all-ages audience all weekend long at T-Mobile Arena. Of course, you can always find more weekend entertainment options by reading my Best Bets column every Friday at LasVegasSun.com. That's it for this episode of The Sun on the Strip. You can go back and listen to past episodes on Apple Podcasts or at our site at LasVegasSun.com/podcasts. I hope you are going on summer vacation like I am and that you have a great time and a happy and safe 4th of July. Sun on the Strip will be back on July 17th. Thanks so much for listening. See you then.